And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul DeTino. I'm Lance Meadow. Good to be with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You could also chime in on the conversation via Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Today we're going to start previewing the Giants' 2018 opponents. We're going to do every single opponent, and we're going to kick things off with a divisional foe, the defending Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles. And right off the top, to provide more perspective on the Eagles, we are joined by a very good friend of the program, and that is Dave Spadaro of Eagles.com. Dave, you got Lance Meadow, Paul DeTino here on Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Hi, Dave.
Hey, guys. Everything's great. I mean, we're in a break period right now after winning the Super Bowl. You have a chance to really gather your breath and kind of put it all in perspective, and it's been spectacular. And this is a good football team. I think the division is excellent. And when July 26th begins, the start of training camp, I'm really excited to see how it all pans out for the Eagles, with only eight teams ever repeating as Super Bowl champions. We know how hard it is.
Well, you know, Dave, let me ask you that. Before we get into the specifics of the roster and some of the moves that were made and even some of the injuries that still are going to be talked about as you guys open training camp, what about that whole kind of difficulty of repeating? We know that the Patriots of the last 25 to 30 years have basically been the only team that's kind of mastered the art of being the defending champion and winning the ring a second straight season. I mean, everybody talks about it. Everybody says, oh, we're going to be the team to break it, but nobody breaks that jinx. It's very, very painful. How are you guys going to do that?
Well, I'll tell you, I certainly appreciate having these last 4 months, 5 months, going through, seeing what it's like. I certainly appreciate what the Patriots have done, because
yeah,
it is very difficult. And kind of to explain it for fans, I'm not sure it's easily translatable, but, I mean, your time, obviously you have shorter amount of time to prepare. The demands on your time are intense. You know, everybody walks in Philadelphia. My gosh, everybody waited a lifetime for this. It's a matter of understanding that you're going to get bombarded by friends and family and business opportunities, and you just don't have time. So it is very difficult to kind of put it all in perspective. Stop feeling great about yourselves, knowing that 2018, nobody cares that you won the Super Bowl. You're going in 0-0. Just like everybody else. I just think plus the Eagles have a bunch of injuries that are lingering into the late summer here. It's just really, really difficult to do. I certainly am interested to see how this team responds mentally and really after watching all these injuries physically.
And you know, Dave, on top of that, one of the things that I also think puts me in awe of when I talk about Belichick and the Patriots is that, you know, to climb the mountain that first time, everybody has that burning desire. You know, I got to get a ring. I got to get a ring. I got to get a ring. Then you get a ring. I don't care how many guys say, well, they want another one. A lot of times that fire is not nearly as hot after you get that ring, especially with the kind of economics that we're talking about in professional sports these days.
Well, there is absolutely no question of that. But I will say this. I think in that area, the Eagles should be okay. You know, Carson Wentz didn't play in the playoffs or the Super Bowl. Jason Peters missed half a season. Jordan Hicks missed half a season. So there's enough of the veteran leaders on this team who are going to be ravenously hungry to play in a Super Bowl, something that they've not done. And certainly Carson, having won a national championship at North Dakota State, having been injured, coming back from the injury, understands how to play at a high level. But there's no question, you know, the Eagles are no longer the underdogs. The Eagles are the hunted team. I think that changes everything when you get into the field of play. You're going to get your best, the best shot from every single opponent. You better bring your A game every minute of the day.
Well, Dave, you alluded to the injuries, so let's start there as we get a little bit more in-depth into the personnel that the Eagles are going to showcase in 2018. And you mentioned two players that were not around for the postseason run, Carson Wentz as well as Jason Peters. Wentz the torn ACL, Peters the torn ACL and MCL. You know, how have they looked so far this offseason? How far along are they in terms of their rehab?
Yeah, it's been encouraging. The first, Jason Peters, who was hurt midway through the season, had a couple of months to rehab, took a lot of set reps in 7-on-7s, really worked doing the phantom drills, didn't get into any sort of quote-unquote contact. But I would think he'll be ready to go, and they'll bring him along slowly. But I don't think there's as much of a wonder about when he'll be back. I think Jason will be back, and we'll see how long he lasts. I mean, he's up there in age. He's been around a long time. He's been injured. Obviously a very valuable left tackle, one of the best in the history of the game. But I would think he'll play in the preseason, I think. Now, Carson was doing things in practice that, you know, being around the game for a long time, I've never seen 6 months after surgery. Going out and playing 7-on-7 and moving like he moved, it was remarkable. I mean, it was remarkable. Now, my personal, when I've seen his injury through the course of years, I think you get to 90%, and then that last 10%, you're not going to go back on the field until you are 100% cleared, until you are all the way back. I think that is the mystery. I think right up until August, midway through, Carson will be great, and he'll take a little rep here, a little rep there. But to get him ready for the Atlanta Falcons on September 6th, a lot trickier situation, going from 90, 93% to 100%, you don't want to risk rushing that last 7, 8, 9%. So Carson's still very much a question mark for the start of the season. He's made great progress. I mean, the kid's a stud. He works harder than everybody. He loves the game. Humble kid. And that has helped him come back very, very quickly. Whether he gets back all the way before September 6th, I don't think anybody has that answer right now.
Dave, go ahead, Paul.
Well, I was simply going to build off of that for a second and say that, will you expect Foles to take most of the preseason snaps, at least with the starters?
Yes, I would say that he will take. I would be very surprised if the Eagles put Carson Wentz out on the field in preseason. I mean, as a rookie, he played one quarter of a game, suffered fractured ribs. The Eagles then traded Sam Bradford, and voila, Wentz was a starting quarterback and played well early in the season. So I don't think they're concerned with getting him on the same page with players and getting him up to speed that way. I think the risk far outweighs the reward, putting Wentz on the field. So Nick will play limited time in the preseason. The kid they really want to see is Nate Sudfeld, third quarterback on the depth chart. They think he's eventually got starting ability, so they really want to see him in preseason and see what he can do and, you know, kind of build some depth at that position, knowing that Foles could be here next year, could be gone next year, traded, free agent, whatever.
Sure.
They want to know that they've got a third quarterback and a future developmental kind of quarterback in Nate Sudfeld.
Dave, speaking of the quarterback depth chart, and I bring up the Dallas Cowboys because we always hear this in the court of public opinion when you have one quarterback get hurt, another quarterback come in, and then Foles taking the team all the way to the Super Bowl, that, you know, maybe there's somewhat of a quarterback controversy or it's a distraction to the team. And when you saw what happened with Dak Prescott and Tony Romo, there was maybe a certain level of that. How much is that apparent now that Foles is fully healthy? Like you mentioned, he may be getting most of the starter reps. Wentz is still working his way back. How much of that is a concern? How much of that is even an issue heading into this season?
Yeah, zero concern in it. Look, part of the reason the Eagles won the Super Bowl last year was because they had this remarkable chemistry. They have a coach who doesn't have an ego. They've got a quarterback who doesn't have an ego. And Nick Foles falls right in line with that. He and Carson have a great relationship. Nick knows that when Carson is healthy, it is Carson's team. And I think Nick is very comfortable in this environment right now. So it's been discussed. It's been reported on. It's been written about. It's been chatted about on sports talk radio. And I just don't see it, and nobody sees it. In fact, the way that Nick and Carson conduct their relationship in front of the whole team really sets the kind of the example for the whole team to follow. Guys, we are here for each other. We are here for the team. We're not here for individual glory. And both of those players have demonstrated that to perfection, and that kind of filters down to the rest of the locker room. This locker room really does have something special going right now.
I got to ask you, with Sproles coming back off of the injury, and look, he's been in this game a long time. It's not like it owes him anything. I don't know where his injury stands, but how do you see this running game shaking out? I know that Ajayi is going to be the lead guy, but Smallwood, you know, certainly showed some flashes last year. How are they going to break up those carries?
Yeah, I think it'll be committee approaching it. I would expect Sproles to be in certain packages where you can put him out in space in the passing game, dare a linebacker to cover him. The Eagles do have a lot of versatility in the offense. I'm not sure how many carries he'll get with Ajayi, with Corey Clement, with Wendell Smallwood, who's got to stay healthy to make it. The Eagles have built up quite a bit of depth at that position, and they're going to give Ajayi the football and let him run it and work in Clement, who had a big game with four catches, 100 yards, a touchdown in the Super Bowl. They've got Denell Pumphrey, who was a fourth-round draft pick last year. They're going to see what he's got. Look, it's not like with the Giants have the superstar of superstars in Saquon Barkley. You get him the football. The Eagles are still going to mix and match their personnel packages and try to work to the strengths of this running game.
We're talking with Dave Spadaro from Eagles.com as we're previewing the Philadelphia Eagles for the upcoming 2018 season. And speaking of the running game, Dave, the offensive line is certainly an extremely important facet to help the running game. And what jumped out to me, Dave, from last season, why the Eagles had such an impressive postseason run is how the depth chart performed. Because, as you well know, they suffered injuries across the board, including the offensive line, as we were talking earlier about Jason Peters. You see a guy like Stefan Wisniewski step up. It seems to me on paper, Dave, the offensive line is pretty much intact from last season. How does the offensive line look, and how confident are you that that group can pick up where it left off last season?
Yeah, it should be a strength of the team. They lost Peters. They put in Halapulavati Vaitai, a second-year player. He played left tackle. They won the Super Bowl. He played pretty well, not at the level of Jason Peters at his best, mind you, but played well. They've got some younger players battling for depth roster positions, Isaac Seumalo backing up. Stefan Wisniewski, here's a classic example of a player you just – he made it all come together. He had been in Oakland. He had been in Jacksonville. Came to Philadelphia, a backup. And then he's the kind of guy who just finds his way into the starting lineup. And he replaced Seumalo early in the season. The line had been struggling. He really solidified things, played the rest of the way. The Eagles bring all five starters back, plus Vaitai, plus Seumalo, plus Chance Warmack. They drafted a couple kids late in the draft. We'll see where they are at the end of preseason. But I think the Eagles feel like the line of scrimmage is very much a strength for this offense.
It seems to me, as far as the passing game, if I can go to the wide receivers, we haven't touched them yet. They're looking for Mike Wallace to come back and really kind of fulfill his potential after having some down seasons. I think a lot of folks over the course of his career have been somewhat disappointed by his production. It looks to me like the Eagles are counting on him to really be everything that he was supposed to be a few years ago.
You know, I think he's really the honest perspective here is that they lost Torrey Smith in free agency. So they bring in Mike Wallace, vertical threat. Compliments Alshon Jeffrey on the outside, works off of Nelson Agholor on the inside, can play a part with Zach Ertz, a tight end. You know, so like every piece, there's not an alpha receiver here. There's not a Pro Bowl super. I mean, Nelson Agholor is the best receiver they've got. I mean, first round draft pick, terrific slot player, really came into his own, developed nicely, key part of why the Eagles won the Super Bowl. I think Wallace just has to come in here, play fast, catch the ball consistently. He'll get targeted a few times a game, but they do not look for him to catch 5, 6, 7 passes each week. They don't need him to do that. They need him to bring that vertical burst and go over the top. They want to do that in the offense. And he looked good in the spring. I know he's been around the league. He's bounced around. He's been up and down. He's got a lot of personality. Again, I think coming into Philly and kind of understanding your role is very important. And Mike seems to have bought into that after a couple of years of going deep in Baltimore, turning around, and the football not there. Well, with Carson and Nick Foles, the ball will get
there. They will get it there.
Yeah, I don't think he has
to. They both have big arms. They both have big arms. They should have time to throw the football. It's a really complete offense.
You brought up Zach Ertz, Dave, who had a magnificent season last year. And, you know, one of the other tight end players to me that fell under the radar last year but was a key contributor both on offense when Ertz got hurt for a little bit and on special teams was Trey Burden, who has since signed with the Chicago Bears. And one of the things the Eagles, I think, have prided themselves on is the depth chart and the depth specifically at tight end. who do you see replacing a guy like Trey Burden, both from an offensive standpoint as well as on special teams this season?
Yeah, from offense, their first pick in the draft, second-round pick, Dallas Goedert, South Dakota State. Looks like Zach Ertz 2.0. We'll see how he makes that jump from South Dakota State to the NFL. But good route runner, known to have good hands. Eagles pleased with him in the spring. Again, we'll see how that translates to the regular season. Special teams-wise, I mean, my gosh, the special teams, I don't know if anybody replaces Trey Burden. He was so good. And in today's game, I'm not even sure where the special teams are with the new kickoff rules, with the helmet rules. I mean, so the Eagles are going to have to really replace him on special teams. But I think they went out and signed Richard Rodgers in free agency from the Packers, a solid veteran. He'll be an inline blocker. He kind of replaces Brent Celek. And then they have Goddard, who replaces Trey Burton, and really should be maybe more advanced than Burton, who came into the NFL as a jack-of-all-trades in college at Florida, worked himself into being a productive, good tight end, was a valuable piece last year. I don't think Goddard can be counted on to throw the football on fourth and goal in the Philly special as Burton did, but Goddard, I think, is a better pass receiver naturally, big target, runs well. Again, should fit into what the Eagles are doing.
Let's flip it to the other side of the ball. Dave Spadaro of Eagles.com joining us. It's our summer preview of the Giants' opponents. And my goodness, if I don't start with that pass rush, I would be remiss. I mean, Barnett, Cox, Graham, and now Michael Bennett comes over from the Seattle Seahawks at a deal. I mean, is there any doubt that this team is going to get to the quarterback, Dave?
Yeah, they should. I mean, look, but here's what I think is really interesting about the Eagles' defense. When you look at the teams that have had success against them, the offenses that have had success against them, I think of only a few occasions. Obviously, Brady in the Super Bowl, Eli Manning late in the season at up at MetLife Stadium, and just in general, Eli. And then a couple of years ago, Aaron Rodgers came into Lincoln Financial Field, had a big game for the Packers. Quarterbacks, you can get the ball out of their hands very, very quickly, negating that pass rush, have had success against the Eagles. But they have loaded up inside. There are some questions. Tim Jernigan coming off back surgery in the offseason. Helode Nada, defensive tackle. Can he still play at a high level? Can the Eagles force teams into obvious passing down so that they can turn the pass rush loose? I think teams will try to run the football on the Eagles. I think the Eagles have questions at linebacker. They've got a young, talented group at cornerback. I think you want to slow the game down against the Eagles as much as possible. I think the best matchup in the division is Eagles-Giants, and how do you match up against Beckham and Shepard and Engram and Barkley? I mean, that's very, very difficult to do. But if the Eagles get you in third and long, as you say, they've got depth, they've got versatility, they'll bring it all day, all night long with a lot of players, a lot of veterans who know what they're doing.
Yeah, that's why Jim Schwartz, defensive coordinator, doesn't have too much to complain about because of his rotational pass rushers, as you just mentioned, Dave. But you also brought up that young secondary, and one intriguing player to me is Sidney Jones, who was their second-round pick in 2017, essentially missed the whole season. I think he briefly got in the regular season finale, if I stand correct. So what do you expect out of him, Dave? How much of a larger role could he perhaps take on, given some of the youth and question marks back there?
Yeah, I mean, I think Sidney Jones would have been a top 15 pick in 2017 and tore his Achilles tendon in March at the University of Washington Pro Day, took a redshirt year, played the last game of the year, 29 snaps against the Cowboys, extremely talented in every way. He's a first-round talent. The Eagles don't have that at cornerback. I mean, I think the Eagles expect him to challenge to be a starter and to be a very good one eventually. Now, in the spring, he kind of sat out the last little bit, including the mandatory minicamp. Unspecified injury. Eagles said it wasn't related to the Achilles tendon, lower body injury. Bears some watching there. They've got Ronald Darby. They've got Jalen Mills. You know, they've got Rasul Douglas, another young player. This kid, Devontae Bosby, is really impressed the Eagles in the slot. Their fourth-round pick, Avante Maddox from University of Pittsburgh, a slot cornerback. So they've got youth. They've got some talent. Whether that talent matures enough, takes a step up to really challenge Darby and Mills as the starters, we'll see about that. One of the keys last year, they got great play from Patrick Robinson in the slot. Four interceptions. big play against the Vikings in the NFC Championship game. He's off to New Orleans as a free agent. Eagles need to replace him, and they're just kind of throwing everybody into the mix right now to see who emerges. But replacing Patrick Robinson may be the key question mark on this entire team.
All right, I've got one more from me, Dave. Who will be the X factor, do you think, on this Eagles team? Maybe a guy who's a little bit under the radar, maybe somebody we haven't asked you about, but, you know, by the time the season's over, people are going to say, wow, he helped make a difference for this squad.
Well, Jordan Hicks at middle linebacker is a really good football player, but he's been in the league 3 seasons, and in his rookie year, tore his pectoral muscle, gone for half a season. Had a really good 2017 season. 2018, tears his Achilles tendon. Eagles scrambled at the linebacker position and got away with it. But if they can get Jordan Hicks back on the field full-time, ready to go, the defense takes another step up, and they're a very good football team. I mean, it's already a really, really good football team. Mm-hmm. We'll see how they handle being the defending champions. We'll see how they handle the NFC East. A lot of pressure when you repeat. But if you get your man in the middle back on defense, it makes a world of difference. So my under-the-radar player is Jordan Hicks, Eagles middle linebacker.
Well, Dave, speaking of Jordan Hicks, so they lost him last season. Then Joe Walker, his replacement at middle linebacker, he goes down for the season. So, I mean, it just goes to show you how much they were tested at the linebacker position. And, you know, you've mentioned it could be a suspect position at this point because there's so many question marks. They managed to re-sign Nigel Bradham. Michael Kendricks was cut for financial reasons. You know, who else in that group perhaps do you see stepping up that maybe is not necessarily a household name and they're going to need to be a consistent playmaker?
It's a great question. They don't have an answer at the will linebacker position right now. There are players like Corey Nelson, who played for 4 years in Denver, signed a one-year deal as a free agent to come to Philadelphia. Camus Grugier-Hill, whose claim to fame was last year when the Eagles lost Jake Elliott, other kicker at Dallas, Grugier-Hill kicked off and actually.
I remember that.
But I mean, they are very, very thin at the linebacker position. Last year, they actually played a lot with just Kendricks and Bradham. They brought Malcolm Jenkins down into the slot, into the box rather, as a quasi linebacker. It worked, but. You know, I don't know how long that's going to work in this NFL. Tom Brady torched the Eagles for 500 passing yards, and they scored 33 points. So, it wasn't exactly – the Eagles made the defensive play at the end of the game, but by and large, they beat the Patriots because they were able to offensively trade haymakers with the greatest of all time. So this year the formula's got to be a little bit different. You can't win every game 41-33. The defense has to step up, and there are questions – and legitimate ones about the linebacker positions.
Dave Spadaro from PhiladelphiaEagles.com, kind enough to weigh in and break down the Philadelphia Eagles for the 2018 season. Dave, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. I think if there's one thing we could guarantee, Giants-Eagles games will probably go down to the wire, as they always do every single season.
Yeah, and by the way, guys, I'm sure you've mentioned this, the NFC East, no repeat winner.
Yeah.
Since 2003, 2004.
It's really,
it's amazing.
Yeah, it's a real tug of war. There's no question about it.
Dave, thanks again.
Yep, thanks, Dave.
Greatly appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
You got it. Dave Spadaro, kind enough to break down the Philadelphia Eagles for us. A lot of great information in terms of some of their injuries and how those players are coming along. And, you know, as he indicated, it's all about the depth chart. That was such a big storyline for this Eagles team last year, Paul. One guy going down after another and one guy after another stepping up. I mean, that's a big reason why they made the run they did.
Usually, it's the healthier team that is able to make the run amongst the rest of the contenders, because it is a war of attrition in this league. Last year, the Eagles had some very significant injuries that they were able to overcome. That's not a commonplace for a champion. Usually the champions had a lot of lucky rabbit's feet in their back pockets, and they were able to weather, you know, some minor things here and there. I mean, I remember, and I tell people this all the time, when the Giants went to Indianapolis for the Super Bowl in 2011 at the end of that season. I remember game day morning. I was doing the television pregame, And I remember telling Bob Pop, I was outside the stadium, Lucas Oil Stadium, and it was time for me to give the injury updates and last-minute, you know, reports as to what was going to go on that day. And for the first time that entire season, Tom Coughlin had his entire 53-man roster to choose from. He didn't have a single solitary guy who was going to be inactive because of injury. He had all 53 healthy, and he was going to have to scratch guys healthy for the first time all season.
Which is a good problem to have.
It's a great problem to have. But that's such a blessing in this league nowadays.
Yeah.
And the Eagles faced other problems because they had injuries, and they were able to do it. So.
Yeah, which is why it's so rare what the Eagles were able to accomplish, Paul. That's why I keep bringing it up, because I think what a lot of people tend to forget is it wasn't just Carson Wentz that went down. It was Jason Peters, their left tackle. It was Darren Sproles, a key third-down running back.
He got hurt in the Giants game.
Correct. It was two middle linebackers, as I just mentioned to Dave. They didn't just lose their starter. They lost his backup. So they lost their starting kicker because Jake Elliott got the game-winning kick against the Giants because Sturgis was out.
Thanks for reminding us.
Well, I'm just going through the facts.
Lance,
my
so
apologies,
much.
Okay? It's relevant to today's conversation, unfortunately.
It's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And so I give the Eagles a tremendous amount of credit, folks. I know there are a lot of Giants fans who are going to wince at that. But
well, listen, we're just talking about the facts here.
Got to give them a tremendous amount of credit for being able to pull off last year's championship. But it's last year.
And now it's a clean slate. And as Dave mentioned,
0-0.
Correct. And as Dave mentioned, the biggest challenge is now coming back and duplicating that success, which is extremely hard. I mean, that's why let's put it in perspective here. Paul, what the Seahawks accomplished. Now, they didn't win back-to-back Super Bowls, but at least they made it to back-to-back Super Bowls is an accomplishment in itself because of the parity in the National Football League. All right, let's open up the phone lines. Your thoughts on anything Giants-related? You want to talk about the Eagles? Everything is up for debate and up for the dialogue. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. Julian is on the line. Julian, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hi.
Doing well, Julian. What do you got for us?
Not much. Well, first off, just going off what the last thing you said, the hardest thing to do in the NFL ever is to repeat, just to come back into the season being the same players you were, the same team you were. I think the last time we saw something like that was the Seahawks. I think you hit it the nail on the head, and even then they couldn't get past Tom Brady in the Super Bowl.
They were close,
which
though.
They could have. They were close, yeah. I mean, I think there was one play that they messed up on.
I believe so. I think you're correctly. I think you hit the nail in the coffin in terms of that.
But, you know, I actually was calling to ask, I believe I had asked John Schmelk and, gosh, I forget his name.
Jeff Eagles?
There you go. Asked him, and I wanted to ask you and Paul your opinions as well. This is going to be – we're talking about depth here, right? So our cornerbacks, when you – this is your third – your third year going out there, looking at the field, you guys see what a lot of us fans don't see. We got to wait till Sunday for us to see what these guys come out and do. So I wanted to ask you guys your opinion on Eli Apple. This is your third season watching him in practice. When you guys go out there and watch him, do you guys see something in him that you go, wow, like this kid is super talented, and I know why he's on our team?
Absolutely. No question. You don't even have to go any further. Look, I scouted him out of Ohio State, and I had him as a potential radar pick for the Giants in the first round. I was one of the few. Not at all surprised at his skill set. He's got size. He's got length. He's got speed. He's got stickiness. He's willing to hit. He checks every box, okay? And as a rookie, I thought he should have been on the All-NFL rookie team. I thought he had a better year than Hargraves did down in Tampa Bay. I really did. And I thought he got jobbed off of that squad. But then last year, a variety of things sidetracked him mentally and emotionally, and things fell apart. Well, as Yogi Berra used to say, what, 90% of the game is half mental or whatever it was that he used to say? Well, I know that was baseball, but it applies to football. Because with all the bumps and bruises these guys go through, if they're not mentally and emotionally right, it's going to dramatically impact their performance on the field. And Eli Apple had a very down season for a number of reasons. But skill-wise, there's no question he's a top-flight corner.
Well, and on top of that, Julian, Eli Apple also has the measurements that ideally you want out of a corner. So I think when you look at him from a physical standpoint, and then you take into consideration, as Paul mentioned, his skill set, you know, there's a reason why he's on the roster. There's a reason why Dave Gettleman says you don't quit on talent, because they believe there's upside here. But I think it's a very small sample size that we have to go by with Eli Apple. It's just that rookie year, Paul, that you mentioned. I mean, to me, last season, I said this multiple times on this program, what is there to evaluate from Eli Apple in 2017?
You got to wipe it out. There was so many extenuating circumstances.
Yeah.
That year almost doesn't even count.
So the big question now entering 2018 is, was 2016 a flash? Or was 2016 the first building block of what's yet to come? And that remains to be seen. But from what I've seen in practice, Julian, to answer your question, throughout the spring and what he said to the media, Eli Apple appears to be a different player. And I think that's a positive. I think he's embracing the clean slate. Mm-hmm. I think he's motivated both physically and mentally. Now he's just got to show it in training camp in the regular season. And I think we're waiting just like you to see that. I mean, even though we're at practice, seeing it doesn't really mean much of anything until we get to the regular season.
Fair enough.
Right, yeah, nothing really. I mean, practice is practice. It all counts when it's on the field, when it's on Sunday night or during Sundays. Gotcha. Yeah, but that was just really my main question was, you know, what you guys see from practice and if you guys see the talent there that Dave Gettleman sees and everything, you know, so that was really my main question.
Absolutely,
one last
Julie.
Question for you guys is I also asked John Schmelk and Feagles this question too. I was curious on your opinion. Not that I want to have a bashing session here or anything like that. I know that's not certainly what you guys don't do. But as far as Ben McAdoo, did you guys feel like he was a good football coach? And at any point in the season or when he was around, did you guys say to yourselves personally, as Giants, you know, you guys have been around in this franchise forever, did you guys ever say to yourself before the end, like, this guy needs to go, or this is certainly not the coach that we need for this team? I'm just very curious on what you guys thought during the whole thing of 2017 and as Coach McAdoo as a football coach. And, you know, I just wanted to let you guys off the air with that. And
All right, Julian, appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for weighing in.
You know, I told people this many times, whether it was on this show or on WFAN, Ben McAdoo had never been a head coach at any level before he took the reins of the Giants. And then as a rookie, had 11 wins and went to the playoffs. That is a tremendous amount of success right out of the get-go, out of the box. He never experienced the growing pains that a usual rookie head coach will experience with a team that maybe will struggle, or maybe he had to turn around a team that was just reaching for mediocrity. Things fell so much into place for him as a rookie head coach that in a way it was almost too easy to win 11 games and be a playoff team. So that's when you go into year two, and now you're going to start to experience some of the pitfalls and the detours and the minefields that he didn't have the benefit of learning from as a rookie head coach, and he ran into problems. And to me, it doesn't indicate like the quality of the football man he is. It just indicated that he did not have enough of head coaching experience and enough of time earlier in his career to deal with those types of pitfalls. And they always tell you, experience is the best educator. He'll be a better, or will have a better record as a head football coach if he gets another chance down the line. Just like Pat Shurmur is getting a second chance after Cleveland.
And he has said that on multiple occasions, because he said if he knew the things that he knows now back when he was in Cleveland the first time around, he thinks he would have been a better first-time head coach. Because it comes with experience. And, you know, to piggyback off of what you said, I think when you look at Ben McAdoo, he was with the Giants organization through some of their struggles because he was an offensive coordinator in 14-15. Mm-hmm. But it's a little bit different when you're sort of watching another man do it.
When you're in the chair.
As opposed to when you're in the chair.
It's a big difference.
Yeah, and that's what I think he learned in 17, where he was thrown in, it was baptism by fire, the team was winning, everything was great. Then all of a sudden, you start to deal with the challenges. And to use a parallel, you know, Sean McVay is now going to enter a very critical season, who did a stunning job as a first-year Rams head coach.
Sure.
Paul, now, can he duplicate that? Can he get the team back to the playoffs? That's going to be something that he's going to have to go through. Now, I think what helps McVay is that he has a guy like Wade Phillips around him who has head coaching experience. But, you know, then again, Ben McAdoo had Spags, who also was a head coach too. So I don't know necessarily if that's going to be a huge X factor.
To simplify it, and maybe this will make more sense because we talk about players so much having sophomore jinxes, rookie stars who come into the league and kick butt during their first season will often have what's called the sophomore jinx or the sophomore slump.
Yeah.
Because guess what? People catch up to them. People start making things difficult for them. And because they did not have those rookie growing pains, all of a sudden, they have them in year two. So if you will, I would submit to you that Ben McAdoo had a lot of sophomore jinxes and sophomore slumps kind of, I don't know, avalanche on him in year number two. And who knows how much he'll learn from it. I suspect that he will. But that'll be down the road for another time.
Yeah, and the other challenge when you become a first-time head coach, Paul, just real quickly before we head to the phone lines again, is, you know, Ben McAdoo's been on the offensive side of the football his entire career, even going back to Green Bay, Paul.
Yeah.
He's a tight ends coach. He was a quarterback's coach. He comes to the Giants, then he elevates the offensive coordinator. And one of the things that I think is maybe a challenge for most people, when you become a head coach, now you have to sort of peel yourself away from just the offense, Paul. And you have to say to yourself, I am now in charge of the entire team. I've got to now give just as much attention to the defense. That doesn't mean that I have to babysit them, but I've got to make sure that I'm zoned in on them just as much as I am on offense, because you've got to be aware of all of the things related to the team, all of the things related to your players, as just opposed to one facet of a team. And when you're a positional coach, I think it's easy to fall into the pitfall of I'm just going to worry about my sort of corner, right, and not necessarily worry about the ins and outs of every other corner. And, you know, that comes with experience and time when you're in the head coaching chair. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Doug on the line. Doug, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul. How you guys doing?
Hi.
Doing well, Doug. What do you got for us?
I want to read out a couple names to you guys right quick. Julio Jones, DeAndre Hopkins, Mike Evans, Ashawn Jeffries, those are just a few. My concern is the free safety. The free safety has to be versatile. He has to be a good observer. He has to basically be the smartest guy on the field. Eli Apple and Janoris Jenkins, I don't care if they have Pro Bowl seasons, which I pray they do, but those receivers I just named will get a step on them, and there will be some shots down the field because these are no ordinary receivers. These are Pro Bowl receivers, and they're going to get a step on either Eli Apple or Janoris Jenkins sometime during the game. This is where the free safety is vital. This free safety has to be there. And when that happens, we're going to have some 60-yard bombs going on, and this is what I'm talking about, the free safety position. It's very vital to James Betcher's defense because he basically has to be the smartest guy on the field, and he has to make that judgment. When that happens, he has to be there. So my question is to you, is there anybody on that Giants team that can fit that position? Because if not, they're most certainly going to have to find somebody.
Well, there's a two-pronged answer to this. One is that Darian Thompson shows the ball-hawking skills that he had at Boise State and appeared to show when he was a rookie with the Giants in training camp before he got banged up, because last year, another one of those guys who took a major step back. It just did not happen for him production-wise, but I know they think that he certainly is going to be in this competition come August. But the second part, which may be more relevant to your question, James Betcher is all about creating mismatches and confusion so that the offenses cannot pick up who the hot guy is coming on the pass rush. And when you get those mismatches and you are able to get offenses guessing and they guess wrong, well, guess what? You're on top of that quarterback in a millisecond. And that kind of throws off all the timing and all the deep routes that your great wide receivers that you're talking about are going to try to run. And so I would maintain to you, it's not so much about the coverage skills or the smarts of the deep safety in the Giants scheme. It's going to be more about what does Betcher do to create the mismatches that cause the offense to short circuit.
And
Paul, understand, but some of these quarterbacks can step away from the rush and can throw on the run. Matt Ryan's and the Drew Breeses and the Carson Wentz's can step off the rush and still launch it down the field. So the rush could be coming, and they can step away. They're good at it. That's what I'm saying. But that, regardless, that free safety is vital. That
well,
free
no,
safety
and
be,
Doug, I agree with you, and I get your point. There are a lot of versatile quarterbacks in this league that even if they have defenders in their face, they can sort of run to the sideline and extend plays.
Sometimes guys will make a play,
and
the elite quarterbacks
are
going to make those plays.
But to get back to the main question about is there somebody that could step up in that free safety position, regardless of the scheme, I think that's the major topic here we're talking about. Darian Thompson showed in college, as Paul mentioned, that he could play that center field position and he could be opportunistic and he could also come down to the line of scrimmage. Unfortunately, injuries have interrupted his production and his durability. One guy that I don't think is getting a lot of attention, who I truly believe I'm very high on him, and I wouldn't be surprised if he becomes an integral part of the safety rotation and maybe even locks down the starting job. I could see Michael Thomas being the free safety this season next to Landon Collins. I think that people view him specifically as a special teams player, and he has been a great special teams player, but he also has plenty of experience playing the safety role with his time with Miami. And the new Giants secondary coach came from Miami. I think Michael Thomas, when it's all said and done, could very well be the starting free safety on this team next to Landon Collins. I think he has the experience, and I think he has the versatility. I would not dismiss him. And I hope Darian Thompson bounces back because his skill set is attractive, but I would dismiss Michael Thomas.
He's got a good build. He's 6 feet. He's 200-some pounds. He's got the build for it, for the free safety. And he's got some speed for it, too, so I'm just hoping he shows up. That's one guy who's got to have one of them blast-out seasons. Because he's got to be smart, too. If he's smart enough to play that position, that free safety's got to be, just about like I said, smart as he got.
Well, and you also have Andrew Adams in the mix, too. I mean, that's another player who has been on the Giants the last few seasons. Has also been a special teams guy. So, you know, they have a few players in the mix. I think they're looking for that consistency. That's what they're searching for.
Keep in mind, though, that if you're looking at Michael Thomas, he's got one career interception in 5 NFL seasons, of which he only started for a season and a half. But if you're going to play center fielder,
that,
you better get some picks.
You better get some picks. But I think to Doug's question, I think also you want a guy that's going to be in the right spot and
be
smart.
Yes.
So to me, I'm not – because in fairness, Paul, Darian Thompson, how many interceptions does he have?
Well, he did not have a good season last year.
The point is –
He had 19 at Boise State,
I know he did, but the point is if you look at Michael Thomas and Darian Thompson, they're on an even playing field in terms of the opportunistic plays. Neither – has anything to write home about in the NFL.
That's why it's a competition.
There you go. So what I'm saying is I understand you want that center fielder to be that guy that could pile up the interceptions,
but
if you look at Andrew Adams, Darian Thompson, and Thomas, they all don't have a lot.
He has to be knocked down, swiped away.
Of course.
Passes.
Well, he's got to be. That's what I said. It's where he plays.
The
position that he's in on the field is just as important as his ability to get the interceptions. There's no doubt about it, Doug, and appreciate the phone call.
Thank you so much for weighing in.
So that's why it's going to be interesting to see how those three battle out. And one of the things that you and I also talked about, Paul, on the show.
Was Andrew Adams.
Andrew Adams, but also maybe James Betcher puts three safeties on the field more often than not. I mean, that still is an option, too.
Could happen.
Given the questions at the slot position for the cornerback spot.
Could happen. And there'll be times, trust me, when Landon Collins is going to be playing deep safety. It will happen.
Yeah, because you figure he's going to be that hybrid player that they'll move around. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Dave is in Cranford. Dave, what's happening?
How are you, Lance? How are you, Paul? Great
Hi.
Show,
well,
like
Dave.
Always.
Appreciate
Thank you.
That.
Love the interview with the Eagles guy. I give him a lot of credit. It's painful for me to kind of give him credit. But give him a lot of credit. I thought it was actually a very balanced look at that team. I would say one name he didn't mention that I think flew under the radar, who's coming off of a pretty bad injury, was a D tackle. There's Jernigan.
He did mention it. Yeah.
And you did mention, I'm sorry.
He did, yeah. He brought up, Dave, the fact that he's dealing with an injury, and that's one of the guys that was a critical player in the rotation last season. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I missed that.
No worries.
So I just thought that, you know, they've got some injury stuff. It really is fascinating. It was such a crazy year last year, as we know. But we really, we played both those games. I mean, both those games could have went in either direction, as we remember. And, you know, in this sport, you know, you win, you lose. That's it. That's the beauty of it. But it really is fascinating looking back on last year with such a bad year for us and a historic year for them. you would have thought the opposite in terms of how we played them. But, you know, just an interesting thought.
Well, Dave made a great point, and I don't mean to interrupt, but I think it's relevant here when he said that teams that get the ball out quickly give the Eagles problems because, quite frankly, their secondary has been weak for years,
yep,
and their linebackers have not been great coverage linebackers for years. And so when you look at last year's two games and you see Eli Manning had his two best games of the season against Philadelphia and the Giants gave them everything more than they could handle, or should I say everything and more, you know, maybe that should not be a surprise because matchup-wise, the Giants are going to give them trouble.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Paul, this is really up your alley, and I think that is just a comment that I'd like to have you guys talk about, and that is just the impact of coaching overall. And I think as you look at the quotes coming out of the preseason and mini camps for us, and listening to, you know, obviously Pat Shurmur and then I think also Betcher, but you hear it sprinkled throughout. And I think for these coaches, one of the challenges that they have is that they got to be very smart, very capable, and they all can very quickly fall in love with their scheme. And I think that's what I would say about McAdoo was that, you know, very smart guy, but I think he was very, very, very much in love with his scheme overall. And I think what you hear that's very mature from both the new coaching staff now for the Giants is the importance of the players within the scheme. And that it's not, and again, it's not black or white. There's a balance to it. That scheme's super important.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to put your players into a position to succeed. And you hear that over and over again. And if you look back at last year, injuries, everything else that you want to talk about, it was just that there were certain times that our coaches just put their head in the sand and we're going to run that scheme or we're going to run that play, and there was really no chance of it having success. And I think going into this year, and I'll stop on this, I just think that there are holes on this team. This is my point. There are places of weakness, obviously. Every team has them. We
sure
definitely have them. The issue for me and the reason for some confidence is that I think the philosophy of these coaching staff will be to be able to put and to be able to do their best to manage around those issues. And I think you could see a dramatic impact because of that.
Well, I think that's a fair statement, and I think we're getting that same vibe from this coaching staff. But to be fair, human nature says when things aren't going well, you go back to what you know and go back to what worked for you in the past. And this is part of what I said before about last year when Coach McAdoo, coming off an 11-win season, now things are going rough. Well, his first instinct, like anybody in any job, is going to say, well, let me just stick to my guns to what I believe in and what worked last year because we won 11 games last year. You know, that type of scenario does not lead itself to a person who's going to be mega flexible. First instinct is always going to be, let me go back to what I know best and let me just tighten down on that before I try something
else
new.
That's your comfort zone.
Exactly. Comfort zone. Great phrase, Lance. And I just think we need to be fair about that when we think in terms of flexibility of coaches and try to fit players into schemes and vice versa. And perhaps, again, second time around for Pat Shurmur, maybe that's one of the things he learned in Cleveland is that, you know what? Comfort zone may not be the best way to go. Maybe it truly is better to see what you have and try to work around what it is that you have instead of putting that circle into the square box.
Well, and Dave, to your point, and we'll let you continue, I think what's encouraging about just making adjustments, you have Pat Shurmur who comes over from a Vikings team last year. I mean, just look at it, what they had to deal with. Sam Bradford was his starting quarterback.
Yep.
Case Keenum now has to take over. Notice how mm-hmm. production didn't fall off immensely.
The running game.
Okay, running game in terms of losing their starting running back. And then all of a sudden now utilizing Latavius mm-hmm. Murray, who was with the Raiders, and bringing in Jerick McKinnon, who was a third down back.
Sure.
Running game stayed relatively even. So now I'm only looking at the offense because Pat Shurmur had nothing to do with the defense. But that's encouraging to me that, okay, he lost key playmakers, but they made the tweaks that were necessary, and they still were able to go out and win games and be productive. So that, I think, is something positive that happened. I'm not talking about something that happened 10 years ago. I'm talking about something that happened right. a year ago to show you that, all right, well, if the Giants lose some personnel or things are maybe not going right, that he has some near or short-term experience here in which he's been able to make adjustments and keep everything status quo.
Yeah, I just think it's a big – I don't think that every coach in the league would answer the question the same way that our coaches have, which is the importance of putting the players in a position to succeed. I actually believe that some of them think that their scheme is, you know, more important, and as long as the players can execute their scheme, they're married to that. And I don't think we're going to – and I think we're going to see the benefit of that. I'm looking forward to it. So
appreciate the call.
All right, Dave. Thanks so much for weighing in. I mean, it's the old debate about whether or not as a coach, you know, you should stick to your scheme and expect the players to just adjust to it, or do you then adjust to the personnel? I mean, that's a constant debate that
experience
I think everybody always has.
Experience and track record will always show you the light.
Yeah. Well, and also will give you the leverage to stick with one of those sides, right?
It's also
because,
true.
Paul, if you're a coach and you've gone to numerous teams, you've used the same scheme, but the personnel's changed and it's worked, then no matter where you go, you're going to say, listen, it's my scheme. My scheme, you're fitting into
true.
My scheme, right?
That
so
is true.
That's what really plays a big role and a big factor in it. All right, let's head back to the line. Scott's in New Mexico. Scott, welcome to the program. What do you have?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
First, I want to thank you both. I was on last week, and I may be the only Giant fan to espouse the view that the Giants will be a Super Bowl contender. And you at least allowed me to state my views, even though I kind of suspect you may not agree. But
you're entitled to your opinion. Not a problem.
I looked at the teams. I was interested in the conversation with the gentleman from Philadelphia, and there have been six teams that repeated. And all of them were sort of dynasty-type teams, so I'm not quite sure if Philadelphia fits the mode of that based on what I'm looking at presently. So I don't see them repeating, but I know they have talent on the ball club. But the teams that did repeat, I know Pittsburgh did it twice, I think in 74 and 75 and then again in 78 and 79. And the other teams were also dynasty teams, Dallas, Green Bay, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I happen to agree with you, Lance, that I think Michael Thomas could be the player that might replace Darian Thompson. I think he has that kind of talent. But the one thing, if there is one thing missing, I think it's a cover linebacker, sort of like a Talvin Smith or a Deion Jones or a Kendricks from Minnesota. I was wondering what the cap space the Giants have. I think it's about $8 million. Do they have the opportunity, do you think, to be able to pick up somebody that might fit more into the sort of a cover linebacker? I know with the Betcher defense, they're going to do the blitzing, but I still think they need that. I don't know if B.J. Goodson can do it, and I'm not quite sure Olivia Vernon can really cover outside. So I was wondering to get you and Paul's view on whether they can actually get someone before the season starts.
Yeah, I don't think the need is as great as you do. Ogletree's a three-down linebacker who can cover anywhere on the field. They really believe that Lorenzo Carter has coverage skills. In fact, I just saw a stat the other day. He played, 25% of the time last year at Georgia in the slot, which is pretty incredible when
they
you think about
around.
It,
yeah.
With the kind right. of frame that this guy can put out there on the field. We've seen him cover a ton of ground out here during the course of the spring workouts. So
okay.
I think Carter's got coverage skills. Ogletree's got coverage skills. Goodson showed some when he could stay on the field that he's got some coverage skills. And then you also run into, if it's not working, well, you throw out the three safety package and you throw
okay.
one of those extra safeties in there. I don't know that they need to buy anybody else.
Well, and the other part of that question that I think you got to take into consideration, Scott, is even if they have the cap space, to your point,
right.
if there is somebody out there, then why hasn't that player been signed already?
That's true.
Who has those great coverage skills that you're saying the team needs?
Well, could be a veteran who's
well, you're
waiting
right. yes,
for training
it could be,
camp
for example,
to get underway.
No, 100%.
I
like,
mean,
like a
so,
Dez Bryant has skill set and he's still out there. I get that.
So
but
that's not a
no,
good
no,
excuse.
No, but my point is a guy that's going to truly be a difference maker, in my opinion, would have been well off the market by now.
I mean, I think DRC is going to be a difference maker for somebody secondary, and he has decided he's not signing right now.
No, that's fair.
So you can't blanket statement that.
Well,
it just
I'm not
going to
work. But I think the true playmakers, the guys that are going to make the true differences, I think are on rosters already, in my opinion. I mean, there's certainly going to be a guy that you're going to help with depth and here and there. But, you know, just to piggyback off of what Paul said, I agree that there are guys that have shown the ability to cover, but I also think that it's a limited sample size, Scott. And I think your point is fair because B.J. Goodson, I remember watching B.J. Goodson in training camp last year, and they had been running him down the field in coverage, and I thought he did a good job. But then, unfortunately, he got hurt, so we haven't really seen it transfer to the regular season. Lorenzo Carter is simply a rookie. He has yet to play one NFL down. Ogletree, I believe, is a three-down linebacker. And Vernon can play in coverage, but I don't think that's necessarily the strength of his game.
You don't want to waste him in coverage.
So when
that's not a good idea.
When you further evaluate the linebacking core, Scott, I think you got some pieces, but I could see your point that maybe some other guys need to show that ability moving forward. Yeah.
One other question, it's more of a philosophical one. Listening to the other caller about coaching, I kind of agree. If there was a signature play that defined the Giants in 2017, it wasn't really the two losses by field goals. I think it was that 3rd and 33 that allowed Robert Woods to score, and I think sort of the Giants fell apart at that point. How do you establish, and I'll take this question off the air, how do you establish a winning attitude a la New England or one of the other teams that are perennially there, like Pittsburgh, et cetera? Do the Giant coaches really, can they integrate with the players and actually make them believe that they are a winning unit? And I'll take the question off the air, guys.
All right, Scott, thanks for the phone call.
Well, a lot of that has to come from within the locker room and the new guys you brought in from other teams. That can be one way to do it. And the other way that Bill Parcells always believed in was that you want to win those preseason games. Bill had like a 75% winning percentage in preseason games because he believed that you form winning habits during the preseason and that once you learn to start winning like that, it's a good feeling. It's the kind of thing that makes you want more. Hey, I like to win. That feels good. I like it. It's sweet. Let's keep doing those kinds of things so that we can win regular season games too. Bill was a very strong believer in that. Now, a lot of coaches don't. For instance, Ben McAdoo totally believed in the preseason was for competition. He just wanted to see which guys are going to stay on the roster. He didn't think that you experimented with plays necessarily or that you tried to win those games. His number one reason during the preseason was, I just want to see if that second string linebacker is better than that third string linebacker. And that was his primary take on the preseason. Different coaches have different feelings about how you use the preseason. But Bill wanted to win those games. He thought that was a way you could develop those habits and the mentality that it takes to win during the regular season.
Well, to add to that, I also think the habits are built during the week at practice. I think if guys look at practice and take on the philosophy that that's just as important as the games, Paul, then I think that's addictive. And I think that can be seen across the board on the team. If guys then
practice
just
starts in training camp in July.
Absolutely. Well, those habits start early.
Through the preseason.
Yeah, but then also you need to keep that going after week 5, after week 6, meaning you got a Monday night game, you know, you got a Sunday game the following week. Is that attitude still prevalent on the Thursday as you get prepared for that Sunday game, even though you're still exhausted and tired because it's a short week? Those habits are just as important of what you said in August when all of a sudden the durability starts to set in question.
Bill used to feel that it was easier for guys to follow if they would win the preseason games. It would be a lot easier for them to follow those things and take them into the regular season because they believed.
Understandable. Let's head back to the lines. We got Duke and Queens. Duke, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Thank you for taking my call.
Hello.
You got it, Duke.
I love you guys. I got two questions. My first question is, if you could say something personally to one guy on defense, one guy on offense, you know, because I know you're reporters and I know you get to ask them questions, but it's never like a sit-down one-on-one. If you could ask one guy on each side of the ball, one question, what would it be and why?
That's a good question.
I'd like to know what it is to be like Eli Manning.
Oh, my God. Why am I not surprised?
What is it like to be a two-time Super Bowl MVP? What was it like to really be in the helmet to throw that pass to Manningham in Indianapolis, or to throw that pass to David Tyree in Arizona. That would, no matter how many times he talks about it, I still can't put myself in his helmet and feel what that was like.
Well, I would think that the question should be more relevant to the 2018 season. That's just me personally speaking. At least that's what I thought, Duke, you were asking, as opposed to reminiscing about what happened 7 or 8 years ago.
Yes, I was. It was about this season, but that was an amazing answer by Paul.
You asked.
So maybe, Paul, for your defense, it could be now.
I would probably want to know right now. I would want to know from Alec Ogletree. I would want to know his basic core philosophies of how he is going to run Betcher's very complicated and complex defensive scheme, because it is a very fluid scheme, and he's going to be in the heartbeat of the beast. Let's face it; it all starts with the guy who's got the speakers inside his helmet at that inside linebacker position. And so Ogletree is going to be a huge part of the mind games that Betcher wants to play against opposing offenses. And I would want to know, how comfortable is Ogletree going to be in having to be the point man for this fluid scheme?
And my question would be more towards Olivier Vernon and just the importance of his role this season, because he's by far the one vet on this team that actually has sack production that we've seen consistently, and, you know, how truly he thinks he could get to the level of Chandler Jones last year in Arizona. Now, I'm not saying that we expect him to get 17 sacks, but, you know, I truly want to know, now that he's moving back away from the ball consistently at that outside linebacker position, you know, what he thinks he could do similar to what Chandler Jones did in Arizona. And then from an offensive standpoint, I mean, Pat Shurmur's offensive philosophy and who ultimately could thrive the most within this system compared to how Ben McAdoo used personnel. And I'd just be curious to hear from everybody of why they think this Pat Shurmur offense is so suitable to the movement of everybody around. So, you know, that together, I think, would be two questions that I'd want to be able to answer and hear from the players, rather. So appreciate the phone call, Duke. Hopefully that
We got to run. Call us back tomorrow.
Running up against the clock, Duke. But give us a ring back tomorrow. We'll certainly feel free to answer all of your other questions, as that is going to wrap up today's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Back up and running tomorrow at noon. We'll preview the Washington Redskins as we continue to look ahead at the 2018 opponents. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.